Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 18th of September, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rebold Resources, RBD, and Sachin discusses the company's recent board appointments and progress at the company. I also have on the podcast Dennis Thomas, Chief Executive Officer at Phoenix Global Mining, PGM, and Dennis talks through the high-grade copper intercepts at the Empire Copper Mine in Idaho. Also, I have Hayden Locke, Chief Executive Officer of Emerson, EML. And Hayden explains how the reduction in the decline, design and cost estimates indicates the potential for a very low capital cost for their Kesmet potash project in Morocco. Plus, Aidan Bishop, founder of Big Dish. Dish is a ticker, and Big Dish operates a yield and management platform for restaurants. And Aidan talks about their UK launch and fourth quarter strategy. Also, I have on Louis Coetzee, Chief Executive Officer of Kibo Energy, K-I-B-O, and Louis gives an update on the Empire Coal to Power project in regards to the Tanzania Electricity Supply Company's invitation for qualification, which was announced today. Oh, and of course, I have a list of the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Want to know which companies are about to list on the London Stock Exchange? To see an up-to-date list of all the new and upcoming London IPOs, please visit voxmarkets.co.uk/IPO-watch.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rebold Resources. RBD is the ticker. Sachin, good to chat to you again.
Good to chat to you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, listen, you know, you're welcome on, and there are plenty of shareholders that I know welcome you coming on, so it's always good to catch up and see what's happening here. And you've recently appointed some new members to the board, and we'll get into that, why, and what they bring to the company in a bit. Before we do, Sacha, for people not familiar with the company or new to the podcast, can you explain or summarise what Rebold Resources is all about, please?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So Rebold Resources is an AIM-listed upstream oil and gas company, and we have a specific strategy of deploying our capital into projects where the capital we provide allows near-term drilling activity to take place. And on success, that drilling activity will subsequently lead to a clear pathway to monetization. And because of the dislocation that exists in the marketplace today, the ability to close the value gap at the point we make the investment at and the value recognition will lead to substantial returns for our investors. We've already demonstrated some success having achieved that strategy in California, and we look forward to rolling that out against the rest of our portfolio in the very near term.
Excellent stuff. Okay, let's get into the news. So, you have appointed two new members of the board, Mike Felton and Marcos. Could you explain, please, Sacha, why and what they bring to the board, please?
Yeah, sure. So we're, first of all, I should say, absolutely delighted to appoint these two non-executive board members. And as you said, it was Marcos Mazetic and Mike Felton. And their areas of expertise are in the upstream oil and gas space and capital markets, respectively. And that expertise will complement both the existing board and the management team alike. I think it also adds valuable technical and market-based input into Riobol's considerably dynamic and differentiated upstream oil and gas strategy, which I just described. Clearly, we're a very quickly growing company, having achieved success already, and we have no intention of stopping here. And building the capability of the board out the way we have is one of those areas that allows the platform of growth to continue.
Excellent stuff. Good stuff. And just take this through. So, like, you got a lot going on. Even before the end of this year, you got a lot going on. So, what's the next kind of milestones we look forward to then, Satcha?
Well, there are a number of milestones that we've got coming up, and I'll touch on those very briefly in a moment, if I might. But I wanted to just provide maybe a little bit more background into Marcos and Mike, because I think that plays quite nicely into that future. So just quickly, by way of background, Marcos specifically, he is an oil and gas heavyweight, and he established and headed Repsol, who is the Spanish supermajor, their exploration campaign, and genuinely reinvigorated their success through the drill bit. And you know, there were some fantastic achievements. Most notably, Repsol achieved them in the Brazilian pre-salt plays during his watch. And these were discoveries like Sayat, Gavia, Pau de Sur, Guara, Yara, Sagittera. And we're talking about billions of barrels of resource here. And, you know, I watched with great admiration Marcos develop that particular campaign. But, you know, it was not only his success that attracted me to him, but it was also his fantastic ability to work with and develop teams of entrepreneurial people to achieve the success they had, which is something, you know, that would be invaluable to us as an organization. And with Mike Felton, he was a very successful fund manager at ISIS and then subsequently at M&G Investment Management. But again, it wasn't just his success as a fund manager that was so attractive. He also built teams and had a particular knack of developing talent and crystallizing that talent into genuine commercial success. Again, a very important part and facet that really brings the board together and will help Riobol deliver its future strategy. So just then to highlight how that plays into what we're talking about and the question you specifically asked is associated with the near-term activity that we've already had success on. So we closed Riobol's California transaction in June. We carried out a workover program that has been successful, that is now generating barrels and generating us cash flow. We've had a successful discovery, and we're hopeful to have some very good, encouraging results, test results, and flow rates from that well in the near term that we can report to the market, all of which demonstrates a clear pathway to monetization from the investment we made in that region. But then that applies to the rest of the portfolio as well. And we look forward to the campaign of activity that carries on in California, with another 2 to 3 wells there, as well as the activity in the UK, which is Wick and Coulter, and then finally the activity that will be taking place in Romania on the Pata license. And all of that means that each of these wells can lead to really transformational success for us as a company and substantial returns for our investors.
Excellent stuff. Well, Satcha, you're talking corporate updates and progress here, but personally, you must be quite delighted with how you're progressing here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is clearly in such a short period of time and really from a standing start more or less a year ago to have created what we've created with, I should say, the support of so many institutional investors and most recently M&G, providing us the capital to actually execute A, what was originally just a vision, but B, actually being able to translate that into genuine success and into monetized value is really, I'm ecstatic to be able to sit here and describe what we've achieved in this period of time.
Marvellous stuff. Well, one final thing, Satcha. If people are listening to this right now, like the progress you're making and what you're talking about here and how busy you're going to become over the next few months but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've already touched on them already. But I mean, maybe I'll lead with this one. The first thing we should say for a company of our size, the institutional support from, as I said, the institutional shareholders who've participated in our various rounds of fundraising is a clear indication of the commitment that they have to the growth platform that we are and have already established. Combined with the board members we've just talked about, it means we are really fit for purpose to take that next leg of growth going forward. But it's not just about growth in the long term. We do have this near-term news flow. We've already achieved success on the Well Workover campaign in California. We've had success on the drill bit on West Brentwood. So Venturini Ginocchio number 3 well will be reporting results very shortly, we expect, on the production of that well, and we believe it will be a highly economic well. There's further activity to take place in California. We also then have the campaign we touched on a little earlier, but finally, with the resources, financial resources that we've acquired to date, we continue to look for new investment opportunities to roll out the strategy that we've already successfully achieved that generates substantially high returns for our investors.
Excellent stuff. Satcha, good to chat to you. And like I said, lots going on between now and the end of the year. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, Chief Executive Officer of Phoenix Global Mining. PGM is the ticker there. Dennis, thanks for joining me again.
My pleasure, Justin. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, and I've just been looking through your news. Some decent copper grades coming out here at the Phoenix Mine, the Empire Mine, I mean. And we'll go into that in a bit, the detail. You can tell us what it means, the significance of this discovery, and what you're pulling out of the ground there. Before we do, Dennis, for people not familiar with the company or new to the podcast, just summarise. What is Phoenix Global Mining all about, please?
Phoenix Global Mining is all about developing base and precious metals projects in North America, particularly the USA, Idaho, where we're focused on our developing the Empire Mine, a copper, gold, silver, zinc, tungsten mine, past producer. And we're also exploring for cobalt in the Idaho Cobalt Belt. Copper cobalt up there, and also Northwest Territories, where we have an option to proceed on exploration of a high grade gold exploration project.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. Okay, so the news out today is that the Empire drilling program has intercepted high grade copper sulfide mineralization, mineralized extension recognized to the north and at depth, and infill drilling identifies very high grade copper mineralization. It says it all there, but take us through some of the detail here, Dennis, in parts here.
Well, yes, yeah, just going back a bit. The Empire ore body we liked for the simple reason it was in two parts. Mm-hmm. There was the upper oxide zone, which we could get near-term production from, which had been drilled many, many times, underlying sulfide zone, which had never been seen. So it was always perceived as a fairly shallow ore body. Nobody ever gave any heed to the underlying sulfide potential, which, quite frankly, when we looked at it, we thought there was great potential. So we came out with a resource of about 20 million tons November last year, and you and I discussed it on the podcast then, around about 0.5%. And we've had a drilling program. We completed a PEA, preliminary economic analysis in April, again, that we discussed. Mm-hmm. And since that time, we've had this 40,000 feet drilling program progressing. We're a good way into that now, not far off finishing that. We were doing, if you like, two-phase drilling, infill drilling and step-out drilling. The infill drilling that we discussed in the past, of course, was basically to confirm the resources, fill in the gaps, if you like, of the open pit shell that we had designed in the PEA. So this is all part of our bankable feasibility study going forward. The intention being, of course, that we get the oxide into production, and that would pay ultimately for sulfide, what we believe to be a much richer sulfide ore body lying underneath. The drilling program has gone exceptionally well. We reported on some high-grade figures a couple of weeks ago with you. But the results of the latest holes have come in, and we suddenly, this how could I say it, as we discussed earlier, the Empire ore body is certainly expanding in both size and grade. And we've suddenly found we've got great evidence of sulfides in the drill holes that we've got at the moment. And these to the northwest, to the north, to the east, to the south. So if you like, if starting really with our infill drilling, that has been very successful indeed. And you'll see, in fact, from our press release, some of the high grade intercepts there, you know, up to 10%, and we relate copper equivalent, and I'll come back to that later on. So the infill drilling has been very successful. We've even found that the pit, in fact, we're drilling underneath holes that are going less than beneath the pit, the bottom of our proposed pit, and we're getting high grades there. So the pit is expanding in depth. And that augurs very well, I think, in fact, for our enhanced resource when we recalculated sometime in November within the PEA pit area. But the step-out drilling as well has been especially successful. So if you like, the step-out drilling is exploration drilling beyond the pit limits that we presently have. So we're drilling out to the west, where we didn't expect to find very much, and we found out that we've got ore to the west of the ore body. We've found our step-out drilling to the east has been expanding, and we're finding ore out to the east of the ore body. We've our newly acquired granite claims, we're finding ore out to the south. And in the north pit area, in our north pit area, we're finding confirmation of very high grades in the north pit, and then evidence of mineralization in a new zone, particularly called the Red Star Zone, which is 330 meters northwest of the northern boundary of the proposed pit, still on our patented land, and a 20 meter outcrop, which is carpeted with blue rocks. And this it confirms the expansion of the ore body to the north. And of course, we acquired the Horseshoe mine to the north. So we're getting exceptionally good grades, but more importantly, five of our holes intercepted high-grade sulfide mineralization, chalcopyrite and bornite particularly. The bornite is the peacock ore and high-grade copper. So if you like, to a certain extent, the sulfide ore body, which was going to be phase two of our development, is actually, dare I say it, coming to us, which is rather a good way, and it's something that we can't ignore for the future. We're also getting, again, as we discussed earlier, elevated gold, silver grades and zinc, and we're seeing lead showing up as well. So it's a very exciting proposition that we have at the moment in terms of the whole picture with regard to Empire.
Yes, I'd say, and when you say high grades, are people not that au fait? You know, they're not obviously in the industry, but they know copper's a good space to be, so they're looking around for copper plays. What would you say is, you know, a cut-off grade above which is, you know, economically viable? And what is high grade then, Dennis?
Well, we use various cut-off grades. I mean, cut-off grades of 0.2, 0.25% copper. They're the sort of cut, what we call cut-off grades when you're doing calculations for resources. The resource grade that we have, the present open pit, measured and indicated for our ore is 0.54%. So you're looking around about 0.5% in general. We're seeing grades here For example, with our infill drilling, short runs of over 10%, 8%. We have a table in the RNS which actually, when you look at the some of the infill grades, you're looking in excess of 7%, 10% in short runs. These are the figures that if you like, once we incorporate into our resource model, will enhance the grade quite significantly. So we're looking, if you like, to upgrade our present resource model within the presently designed open pit. But of course, as we find more ore, so if you like, we've got to then re-evaluate not only the pit size, we're going to have to look at it, maybe a much larger pit, or we've also got to take into account the type of ore. So when we're starting to find sulfides, then that is presenting us with other challenges, for want of a better word, in terms of metallurgical processing. And also when we're getting enhanced grades of gold and silver and zinc, particularly gold and silver, we then have to look at the metallurgical circuitry and start realizing, well, we start having to look at what's best for the ore body and what's best for our stakeholders in terms of getting an optimal return with regard to the processing route, how we mine it, the tonnages that we mine. So in fact, these discoveries we're making, when we say it's a, I think the quote is a game changer, which has been used in several instances, it is a game changer because we're going to have to rethink the way that we mine this ore body, but rethink it in a very positive and good way. Because if you like, I've always said about this ore body that we've got a tiger by the tail. It's like an onion, and as we've been developing it, we've been peeling the layers off, and every time we peel a layer off, we find something better. And this is the way this ore body is, without doubt, getting. It's beginning to return the faith in which we've shown in it when we first took it on.
Yeah. Okay. So, and what's the next big sort of milestone then, Dennis?
I think next big milestone is, we're in the process now of completing our OTC QX listing. That is proceeding satisfactorily and is imminent. I think we've gone through nearly all the hoops that we need to go through then. We shall be attending the one-to-one conference, mining conference in New York, at the beginning of October, and we'll be talking to American investors, and really, you know, sort of, how could I say it? We've got a very good story to tell them at this stage. And then the next milestone with regard to the ore body is then to look at these figures that we're getting from the drilling program, and we've still some holes yet to complete, and we have another group of holes still waiting for results back from the assay lab. We've also got just under 300 channel samples that we've taken to get those results out, and I think I'm expecting exciting results from the channel sampling. These are surface samples that we've taken, and particularly at the Red Star, the new Red Star zone. That is particularly exciting. And then we'll work up a new model, a new ore resource, possibly sometime in November, possibly early December, particularly with regard to some of the figures that we're getting now, and see the implications of what we found.
Excellent news, Dennis. Okay, well, one final thing to do. If someone's listening to this now, likes the results you've released today at the Empire Mine and the progress you're making there, but are not as yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Justin, I normally trot out the three R's. Mm-hmm. And I'll start with an initial R, that we're in the right commodities, in the right jurisdiction in Idaho, particularly the Empire Mine. We're in the right commodities. We're in copper, and we're getting exceptionally high grades of copper, as I said to you, well in excess of 10%. in returns, but particularly also cobalt, because we're doing the cobalt exploration, and gold in the Empire mine, where we're getting assays of up to nearly 8 grams per ton of gold within some of the holes that we're intersecting at the moment, and silver, 256 grams per ton of silver, and tungsten at depth potential. So we're in some great strategic minerals, copper particularly, of course, which is going to be in short supply, and cobalt as well, with the electric vehicles. The flagship, the second reason I would say flagship Empire Mine project, we have significant production and exploration potential with the ore body expansion, both in the oxides and the sulfides that are now beginning to show themselves, and we're going to actively pursue those. So it's going to be a program of discovery for us in terms of how we do this, and certainly the benefits that we can bring to stakeholders and shareholders alike for the whole project. And on the ground, the third reason, you can have the best ore bodies in the world and ruin them with bad management, but we don't have that. We have a brilliant team on the ground led by our COO, who manages the project actually in Idaho, Ryan McDermott. And he's assembled an excellent team of specialists, particularly in skarn geology. We could not be in better hands. These chaps are beginning to realize the nuances of structural geology in skarns, and this ore body is beginning to reveal itself. And I might add, a supportive board who have been brilliant in making this project a success.
Marvellous stuff. Well, thanks for that, Dennis. And like I say, you've got lots going on before the end of the year, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
We'll look forward to it, Justin. Yeah, good to talk to you again. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hayden Locke, Chief Executive Officer of Emerson. That's EML ticker. Hayden, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good to be here.
Now, we're going to dive into some good news you've released of late about the low capital cost and of your project there. But before we get into that, let's give an overall broad view as to what Emerson's all about, please, if you could, Hayden.
Sure. Emerson PLC acquired a group of Moroccan potash assets located in northern Morocco. We relisted on the London Stock Exchange, a standard listing, in June, having raised £6 million from investors. Very, very strong support, and really put us in a great position to move through the de-risking and project milestones as we assess the potential of these, what we think are outstanding potash projects.
Yeah. Now, you've completed, it says here, and the preliminary data design and cost estimate for the mine access of the, and that's part of the scoping study, which we'll be releasing, I think, is it Q1 next year?
Yeah, targeting the release of the full scoping study in Q1. We initially said Q1. It's looking more and more likely it'll be very much at the front end of Q1 because it's progressing really, really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've come in, you've got some amazing figures, amazing costs you've done here. So how have you done, tell me about the costs and tell us how you've done it.
That's right. This piece of news is very big for us. It really is the first capital investment item of any potash, underground conventional potash mine globally, is how do you get from the surface, from the processing facilities at surface, down to that underground mining horizon. The work's been done by an independent consultant, Golder Associates, through their underground mine access team, who are located here in the UK. And really what it shows is, because of the geological advantages we have at Chemisette, namely that it's fairly shallow and that there's no aquifer sitting over the top of it, we have absolutely huge cost savings relative to virtually all of our peers, but certainly against the Canadians. And not to labour the point too much, but the average estimated by Hatch, a large engineering firm, the average cost for a Canadian potash mine to get from surface to its mining horizon is over $1 billion. The number that we put out today of $35 million, including a 30% contingency, would represent a 95% capital cost saving against those Canadian projects. And this is really a fundamental reason why we believe that Chemisette has the potential to be a low capital cost potash mine development, which is incredibly rare. I say it every time I come on to the show with you, Justin, that it is incredibly rare to have a low capital cost potash development, and we've really ticked the first box in moving this project towards that goal.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at your release there, and you've got a chart of the capital costs. You know, certain companies have it's cost them, and at the top there is BHP Billiton, and it cost them $2.6 billion. To access mineralization. That's a phenomenal amount of money. And considering you can do it for $35 million, how did you do this?
So the difference between the BHP project, and it's probably not that number comes from their annual report. They have spent a bit of money on assessing the project, so we actually think it's probably more like $1.8 or $1.9 billion that they've spent on the shaft. But the really big challenge for them is, number one, they're much deeper, so they're over 1,000 metres below surface. But the second really big technical challenge is they have a huge freshwater aquifer sitting over the top of this deposit. What that means is they have to go through a process called ground freezing. So they have to freeze that huge column of water, build the shaft through a frozen column of water, and then unfreeze the shaft after they've sealed it. That adds a huge amount of technical risk and cost to that development. For us, we're doing a simple decline, which is basically just a tunnel, like any tunnel that you would drive on in the freeways around the UK and in Europe. It's a very much simpler, lower technical risk development methodology. And the reason we can do that is because we don't have that aquifer sitting over the top of our deposit. So these are very well understood methods of getting to these underground deposits. And so we have a fairly high degree of confidence in the numbers that we've been given by our consultants.
Yeah, and was this a sort of, did you have a suggestion that this could be this cheap, or was this a complete surprise to you?
No, absolutely. We did our diligence before we acquired these assets, and this was one of the key things that we looked at. So we had a fairly good idea of the range of numbers that this would come out at. So part of the reason we got involved with this was because we saw the potential for this access to mineralisation to have huge cost savings relative to most of our peers.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but you're confident now you'll deliver, like you said, the scoping study in Q1, early Q1 of next year, yeah?
That's right. And over the next 3 to 4 months, we put out an announcement on the 6th of September, really giving an outline of what the news flow is going to look like over the next 3 to 4 months. The majority of interesting news flow for investors will be the discrete portions of the scoping study, which will eventually go into forming that total CapEx estimate for the scoping study. So people will be able to see, as we move towards delivery of that scoping study, that at each item that we're releasing, we will have cost savings against most of our peers. And that will really help drive that story that this is a low CapEx potential potash project.
Absolutely. Excellent stuff. Well, Hayden, if someone is listening to this, likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
We are a development stage potash project, and we're very well funded to push these assets really quickly through the development and de-risking milestones. We continue to strongly believe that Chemiset has the potential to be a very low capital cost potash development, which is incredibly rare. And this announcement today really is the first piece of evidence of this point. And we're moving quickly towards the delivery of a scoping study, which will provide all of the technical detail and a full capital cost estimate so that people can diligence our claims, but also, more importantly, the economics, so that investors can assess the size of the prize that we're playing for with what we think are extremely undervalued assets at Chemiset.
Marvellous stuff. Hayden, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Aidan Bishop, founder of Big Dish at DISH. Aidan, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Now, you've not long listed, but you've just launched in the UK, and you've outlined your fourth quarter strategy, and we'll get into that in a bit. And before we do that, Aidan, for people new to the podcast or, of course, not aware of the company, explain Big Dish. What is it all about, please?
Yeah, Big Dish is a yield management platform for restaurants. So simply what that means is we're looking to optimize the revenue of a restaurant. How do we do that? We are seeking to send diners to restaurants during their quieter periods, which could be a quieter evening. It could be some quieter times around the lunchtime or the main dinner times. But our goal is to drive traffic to the restaurant and fill up empty tables.
Yeah, yeah, and I quite like, I, you know, I've said this before, but I, as an app, because you work as an app, and of course it costs the consumer nothing, it's a no-brainer to install on the phone, really. It's basically saying to you, would you like to book a cheaper, you know, restaurant time? Or would you like, you know, the meal you're going for, would you like to get it cheaper? And it's costing me nothing, I'm saving money, it's like a no-brainer to install, really, isn't it, on your phone, I think?
No, absolutely. Look, I mean, you know, these type of platforms transform the airline industry. It's changed the hotel industry. And, you know, it's changed a lot of industries. I mean, it's changed the way people take taxis, for example, i.e. Uber. And so basically, Big Dish is a platform type of business. And as you've identified, it's on the consumer side, it's pretty much a no-brainer. But it's also a no-brainer on the restaurant side as well, because we are enabling them to fill up tables that would otherwise be empty. So it's basically a win-win scenario that we're creating.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's go in there. So you've announced, you've launched the beta version in the UK today. Explain what's happening here and also go through what the fourth quarter strategy is, if you could, Aidan.
Yeah, so what a beta version or a beta launch really means, it's like a soft launch. And the whole idea around that is you launch with a small select number of restaurants. And the purpose is to ensure that the technology is working smoothly, the restaurants have been onboarded correctly, the user experience, the booking experience, all functions in a seamless manner. So this beta period or this soft launch period is a 30-day period, and that will allow us to squash any bugs that are identified or just really ensure that we've got it right. And that's really the objective of starting with a small select number in Bath. Of course, when we came to the UK, we did it through the acquisition of Table Pouncer. And Table Pouncer, as we've announced today, in 2017, seated over 125,000 people in Bournemouth. And so we charge on average per pound per every diner seated. And so after the beta launch in Bath, two things are going to happen. One, we are going to scale up in the Bath and Bristol area. And we are targeting to have about 70 restaurants in Bath and Bristol by the end of the year. And these will be independent restaurants, not the big chain restaurants. We'll save those for a latter time. And also next month, we will migrate the Bournemouth restaurants on Table Pouncer to Big Dish, at which point Table Pouncer would have fully been rebranded as Big Dish. And so that's sort of our goal between now and the end of the year. And that's what this period's all about.
Yeah. And do you know, as you were chatting, not that I wasn't listening, I downloaded your app on the App Store there. And it's quite good because you've got certain restaurants and you've got times and the percentage you can get off that meal. So it's very, you know, I like it a lot. I like the way you've done that. So excellent. So how?
That's what it's all about, though, Justin. Yeah. Because you see, if you think about yield management or dynamic pricing, it's charging a different price at different times for the same product, mm-hmm. and it's based upon, you know, supply and demand. So we've created a very simple user experience. Within three taps, you have an instantly confirmed booking at the restaurant of your choice. And you just show up like you would normally do and order your food, enjoy your food. And when the bill comes, the discount is applied to the bill. And it's a very discreet type of solution. So we think it's going to be a big hit. We think the UK, as we've said today, is going to be our fastest growing and largest market for us. So we're really excited about that. And the potential, we think, as we've announced today, is we believe the potential is going to be, you know, up to about 6,000 restaurants in the UK. Now, where do we get that number from and why do we believe that? We believe that because the UK's largest dining discount club called Taste Card, which is an old-fashioned type of card, has about 6,000 restaurants in it. And we're coming to disrupt that model because A, we're free to the consumer, B, we're more friendly to restaurants, and C, we're a data-driven business. And all of these data-driven insights are future opportunities of monetization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So 6,000. And over what period would you say that's going to be happening, hopefully, you're targeting those restaurants?
Well, Q4 is imperative we get Q4 right. So what does that mean? We've got to get the Bath launch working well. We've got to scale up in Bath and Bristol. We've got to migrate the restaurants from Bournemouth onto the platform. And once that's all running smooth, we've then created this sort of launch pad for next year to rapidly scale around the UK. And we've got some exciting things to announce around that, you know, shortly, actually, on how exactly we're going to do that and who's going to be involved with it and how quickly quickly could we get to 6,000 restaurants? It really depends upon how we execute and how we deploy resource. But I would like to think that we could do it, maybe not all next year, but we'll take a big chunk of that out next year.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, I don't know, it's impossible to say at the moment you're starting, but 6,000 restaurants. I mean, how do people go about valuing this business? Because I know disruptive companies can go crazy. Look at something like Just Eat, which essentially was just an app that went crazy. But, how do people value this then as an investor?
I don't know. I mean, I was reading something at the weekend, funny enough, about Alibaba that made no revenue in the first 3 years. I mean, and look at it today. I mean, it is very difficult. You look at some of the, companies like Instagram, for example, that was bought for $1 billion by Facebook. It had no revenue. You look at WhatsApp. And I mean, it is very difficult to value these type of businesses. However, I mean, we've given some insight today on revenue. So look, Table Pounds has seated 125,000 people or more than in Bournemouth. We're charging an average of £1 head. So if you figure what is this business going to generate revenue wise if we can seat 1, 2, 3 million people a year, for example, it's going to do pretty good. And of course multiples on revenue in tech are pretty huge, but I think for us it's really about adoption. This is a disruptive space. It has worked and transformed the airline industry. It has worked and transformed the hotel industry. If this is going to transform the restaurant industry, and yes, it is early, then it could be something very significant. So I'm not too worried about the revenue side of things at the moment. I'm totally really focused on the adoption by restaurants, adoption by consumers, and the revenue will come out of that. And as we've also announced today, as we get a large number of restaurants and users onto the platform, there are additional opportunities for revenue. Possibly there are some in the future that we haven't even thought about right now. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, it's all about building that platform to scale, and that's what we're focused on.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Aidan, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of it, but are not yet following the story because you're relatively newly listed, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Three reasons. Number one, if you like eating out. Number two, if you like a deal. And number three, your management changed. It changed other industries. It could change ours, the restaurant industry.
Marvellous stuff.
There you go.
Aidan, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Louis Coetzer, CEO of Kibo Energy, K-I-B-O. Louis, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Nice to be talking to you again.
Yeah, well, listen, there's been an update on news in Tanzania, and we'll get into that and what it means. Well, we don't know what it means as yet, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But before we do, Louis, for people not aware or not familiar with the company, explain Kibo Energy, what you're all about.
Well, Kibo Energy is, as we were known before or beforehand, Kibo Mining. Just recently formally changed our name to Kibo Energy, company that's repositioning itself to be a leading energy solution provider in sub-Sahara Africa. We at the moment have a couple of projects in our portfolio, with the MCPP, Mbeya Coal to Power project, the most or the most well-known one to all our shareholders. And then we've also made some significant acquisitions in the last year, most notably the Mabasekwa Coal to Fire project, 300 megawatts in Botswana, the Benga Power project in Mozambique, another 150 to 300 megawatt power project, and then also recently a project which is that we're acquiring, which is still not closed, is the Mast Energy developments in UK, which focuses on reserve power solutions in the UK.
Marvellous stuff. So the news of the day is regarding your Mbeya Coal to Power project, and it's about Tanzania sort of updating what the tender process is correct. So what do we know here, Louis?
Well, what we do know at this point in time is that TANESCO has announced this morning a tender process whereby they are inviting companies to pre-qualify for up to 600 megawatts of power production or power generation. That is divided into a category where the minimum size is 150 and the maximum is 300. So you can put in a tender for, or you can pre-qualify your company for either 150 megawatts or 300 megawatts, but not more than that. The total that they want, it would appear from the document that we saw this morning, is 600 megawatts. They have particularly invited companies who already have engagement with Tanesco in some form, like, for example, in Kibo's case, where we have an MOU with Tanesco. And as far as we know, the only coal-fired power project that has a formal MOU with Tanesco at the moment. We don't know much more than that. We know that they've put out this tender, and we know that they want to invite IPPs up to 600 megawatt to participate in this process of pre-qualifying to be a power producer for Tanesco.
Okay, and what does this mean then, Louis, for the company? I know now you're not, you know, you are have lots of projects going on, like you just said earlier, but what does this mean for as far as Tanzania is concerned and the Empire Coal to Power Pro? What does it mean for you, do you think?
Well, you know, as we said in the RNS this morning, we are seeking clarification on whether this has any particular impact or implication for the MCPP and the process that we're involved in getting a PPA for that 300 megawatt power project that we are developing in the south of Tanzania. We have not received that clarification yet. I assume it will take us a couple of days to get that clarification. But, you know, if we analyze what we see in front of us today, it's not something that is negative. At the best, this is a situation where, in addition to what we are developing at the moment, Tanesco is looking for a further 600 megawatts. Or it might be that they want to follow a particular or change the procurement process, whereby they want us to tender for the 300 megawatt with the MCPP. Even if it is the latter, if it is a change in the procurement process that we followed up to now, we're not particularly concerned about that. We are a very advanced project. We have an MOU with Tanesco already, as we've said. We have developed the project to integrated bankable feasibility level, and you know, at least we then know exactly what the process is that lies ahead for us in terms of securing this project or taking it forward. In other words, there will be no uncertainty in terms of the process up to signing a final PPA. So for us, it's still clarification that we require. As we said in the RNS this morning, we want to understand exactly what the invitation that we saw today or the announcement that we saw means for particularly us and the engagement that we have with Tanesco at the moment. I need to also emphasize the fact that we have not received any notification from Tanesco that they are changing the engagement that we have with them at the moment on under the existing MOU. But as I said, and I need to be very clear on this, we've asked for clarification if it does have any particular impact. At the moment, we haven't received anything that tells us that that they're changing the engagement or the process that we have been engaged with them on for the past couple of months.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, like you say, though, this is not your only project at the moment, is it? I mean, the share price has taken a bit of a dip today, but it's not your only project, is it?
No, it's not, Justin. I mean, obviously, I can understand an announcement like the one that we put out this morning will create questions and it will probably create uncertainty. I don't think there's any reason for that to happen. As I said just now, at worst, we're seeing a change in process here, not anything else. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the value proposition of Kibo has changed substantially over the last couple of months. I've said this at many occasions. I am not aware of many companies of our size on AIM that has done a major corporate deal every 4 months for the last year. So we have a project portfolio in the company which has changed the whole value proposition in the company altogether. We are developing altogether around about 1,000 megawatts in terms of generating capacity at the moment in different countries or different jurisdictions. So the value proposition of the company has changed dramatically. We're no longer just a single project company. The MCPP is still very important. We're still focusing on that. But that's not the only value that we are building in the company. And as I said just now, also not a project that is under threat at the moment in any form or way.
Lovely stuff. Well, Louis, if someone's listening to this and maybe sees this dip as an opportunity, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Justin, I think the important thing is that we've set out about a year ago to reposition Kevo as an energy, as a pure energy company that provides energy solutions to the South. In that process, we've done three things. We have significantly strengthened our portfolio with three advanced stage projects in place, in parallel development, and on its way to production in the future. Secondly, we have strengthened our strategic partnerships, of which the announcement recently about the extended and deepened cooperation agreement with GE is clear evidence. And thirdly, we have continued to advance all of these projects in spite of setbacks, in spite of certain delays that we've seen over the last few months. So in summary, strong project portfolio, strong strategic alliances, and strong advancement on or progress in terms of the development of each one.
Marvellous stuff. Louis, thanks for chatting to us, and hopefully we'll catch up again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, ECO ticker there. At four, Savannah Petroleum, SAVP. At three, i3 Energy, that's i3E. At two, Predator Oil and Gas, PRD. And the most followed company in the last 24 hours on Vox Markets is Europa Metals, EUZ. Okay, it's time for the top five most liked RNSs. They are at five, Predator Oil and Gas Holdings in Company. And that was a guy who's managing director of JP Morgan, I think. He's gone over 3% in the company. At three, I had Sachinoza on, Rheobold Resources, investor evening presentation. So that's four. I'm really bad at counting here. There's no numbers next to it or something. I'm really bad at counting. That's Metal Tiger again. Metal Tiger never put their title on the RNS. Holdings in Company, MTR there at three. At two, United Oil and Gas, interim results. And number one most liked RNS came from United Oil and Gas. Oversubscribed placing to raise £3 million. And that'll be used for, I think, acquisitions very soon, because Brian's been talking about that for a while. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.